This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Wa salatu wa salamu ala ashraf al-anbiya'i wa al-mursaleen. Nabina Muhammadin wa ala alihi wa sahbihi ajma'in. Today, inshallah, we're going to be speaking about the fiqh of ghusl. And ghusl is using water to wash the whole body in a specific manner. And ghusl is required for a number of things that a person may have to do, such as a person performing salah and other than that. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Quran, He speaks about a person performing ghusl from janaba, which is one of the things which requires ghusl, when Allah says, وَإِن كُنْتُمْ جُنُوبًا فَاتَّهَرُوا, that if you are in a state of janaba, then purify yourselves, meaning perform ghusl. So ghusl is something which can be obligatory in specific circumstances, and it also can be recommended in other circumstances. And inshallah, today we're going to be speaking about those things which is when a person ejaculates, ejaculate semen from the private part, whether it's a male or a female. This would require, or specifically semen from the male ejaculation, okay, anything which comes out after ejaculation. It's called mani in the Arabic language. And any kind of fluid which comes out of the male when he climaxes, likewise fluid which comes out of the female when she climaxes also. In Arabic, it's called mani. So this fluid, which comes out at the point of climax, when a person is feeling that desire, then it's known as mani. And mani has specific attributes. How can a person tell if it's mani that comes out? Because if this substance comes out of the body, okay, if this sperm comes out of the body, then of course a person has to perform ghusl. So they say it has a distinct smell. And they say it's a thick white fluid. It's a thick white fluid. And they also say that this fluid, when it comes out with force. It comes out with force. It doesn't come out, it doesn't slowly secrete out of the body. Okay, because when a person is in a state of climax and he ejaculates, it comes out with force. It doesn't come out, secreting out of the body in a slow fashion. It comes out quickly. So those are the ways we can recognize if many has left the body, if it's come out of the private part. Of course, for the female, it's different. So it's more watery. And it's more yellow in color, as opposed to the male secretion which comes out. So this substance, when it comes out of the body, it requires for a person to perform ghusl. And of course, it can happen as a result of a person feeling that desire and then climaxing as a result of that desire when he's with one spouse, or it can be as a result of masturbation, which scholars deem haram and some say is disliked. So it could happen in those circumstances. It could also happen while a person is awake, and it can also happen while a person is asleep. It could happen when a person is awake, and it could happen while a person is asleep. And the Prophet ﷺ, he mentioned many, and he said that narrations mentioning the Prophet ﷺ advising people to perform ghusl or commanding people to perform ghusl, because of course it's obligatory, and there are examples of the Prophet ﷺ himself performing ghusl in a state of janaba. So when he was in this state of having this come out of the body, it's called janaba. When you're in a state of janaba, then you're required to perform ghusl. So it happens when you're awake and when you're asleep. When you're awake, when one's with his spouse, or via another method, if it comes out, not with force, and it secretes out of the body, then the scholars, they say, it doesn't require ghusl, because the characteristics of how it comes out have not been met. And sometimes it can secrete out of the body, the very same fluid. It's possible for it to secrete out of the body and not to come out with force. And there are narrations, for example, of some of the companions, Umar ibn Khattab radiallahu an, where out of exhaustion and tiredness, it would come out of the body. Many would come out of the body. And the Prophet didn't command him to perform ghusl as a result of this. And likewise, in certain circumstances, when a person's sick, it can also come out of the body. And again, it's not coming out as a result of desire, as a result of a person climaxing. It's happening as a result of sickness. And likewise, if it comes out as a result of sickness, then it's not something which requires ghusl. It's not something which requires ghusl. Because those the manner in which it has come out of the body, you know, it hasn't been met. The way in which it's supposed to come out for you to do ghusl, that manner in which it's supposed to come out hasn't been met, so you don't have to perform ghusl in those circumstances. We also said that a person can be in that state of janaba as a result of many coming out of the body when he's awake, but also when he's sleeping. When does many come out of the body? When a person's sleeping. Wet dreams, ihtilam in the Arabic language, ihtilam. So when a person has wet dreams, and of course wet dreams are a sign of puberty, and it can also happen after puberty, it's something which is possible. When a person has wet dreams, then many comes out of the body, because a person, as a result of wet dreams and desire, it can come out of the body. In that situation also, he has to perform ghusl. So if he's asleep, and there's a wet dream, as a result of the wet dream, he has to perform ghusl. If a person wakes up in the morning and notices some wetness, what does he do? Okay. So let's say there's three circumstances then. three circumstances. In this situation, there's three things that could be the case. Number one, he knows for a fact that it's many. He knows for a fact it's many. How? Maybe because of the desire he felt. Okay, he remembers. Okay, as a result of this, he knows it's many, which not many. He knows for a fact it's not many. Like the brother said, because of the qualities, the characteristics of this fluid that have come out of the body, or that's come out of the body, he knows it's not many, it's something else. You know, a person may have bladder issues, whatever the case may be, you know, somebody who's older, or you know, he may have some kind of illness, and then urine comes out of the body, as opposed to it being many, for example, and he's aware of this, he knows that it's not many, for a fact, then, of course, he doesn't have to perform ghusl. But of course, he has to make sure he cleans himself appropriately and properly in order for him to offer the salah. And of course, he has to perform wudu. But ghusl isn't obligatory for him in this situation. And the third circumstance is when he doesn't know. So there's no sign of anything. Like there's wetness, but there's no characteristics that he could see or observe in order for him to establish that it's one or the other. Okay, it could be as a result of being very hot during the night, and it could be sweating, it could be moisture down there, it could be many, it could be urine, it could be anything. We have spilled some water there. Okay, it could be anything. So in this situation, what does he do? Of course, there is no confirmation of him having had many come out of the body. So in this situation, ghusl isn't obligatory for him. Ghusl isn't obligatory for him because he hasn't established that money has actually come out of the body. So the first thing which invalidates, the first thing which requires for him to do ghusl is money coming out of the body. Okay, the substance that we've mentioned, it could be the male, it could be the female. When it comes out of the body, it's a requirement now for him to perform ghusl. Number two, the second thing which would require him to perform ghusl is when the two private parts meet of the spouses. So when a person is with the spouse and the private part meets of both spouses, then this situation would require for the both of them to perform ghusl. It would require for the both of them to perform ghusl. The Prophet ﷺ, he said that when a man sits between the four parts of his wife's body and the two circumcised parts of the body meet, meaning the two private parts meet, then ghusl becomes obligatory. In another narration, even if there's no ejaculation, even if nothing specifically comes out of the body, comes out of the private parts, simply the fact that the two private parts have met, that requires for them to perform ghusl. So ghusl becomes obligatory in that specific situation based on this narration. So that's number two. That's the second reason or second means by woman specifically finishing her monthly cycle. So when a woman finishes her monthly cycle, then before she can perform salah, she has to perform ghusl. Before she performs salah, she has to perform ghusl. And number four is once a woman has recovered after giving birth. So once she has recovered from being postpartum, after she's given birth and the bleeding has stopped, then before she can pray, she has to perform ghusl. So after she gives birth, of course, she's in pain, she's still struggling, it's difficult for her, and she may still be bleeding. It could be days, it could be weeks. Once she recovers and the bleeding stops, before she can pray, she has to perform ghusl. With the exception of that bleeding not stopping after 40 days. If it's over 40 days, then she prays. She does ghusl and she prays. So 40 days is the maximum number of days that she can go without praying. If she's bleeding after 40 days, then prayer has become obligatory upon her because it's exceeded the 40-day amount. So prior to that, of course, she doesn't have to pray. If it goes over 40 days, she does ghusl and she prays. So over 40 days, she has to pray, even if she's still bleeding. But of course, before that, if she stops bleeding after a couple of weeks after giving birth, 2 weeks or 3 weeks after giving birth, then she performs ghusl before she performs ghusl before praying. So those are number three and number four. And the Prophet ﷺ, he would mention in a hadith in Bukhari, narrated by Aisha radiallahu anha, he would say to Aisha radiallahu anha, give up the prayers, stop the prayers when your cycle begins, and when it finishes, take a bath and then start praying. So you have explicit hadith here, explicit narrations which speak about when a person should start praying, or when a person or a woman specifically should stop praying, depending on the circumstances of her monthly cycle and when it begins and when it ends, etc. Number five, from the things which require a person to perform ghusl, is death. What do you mean by death? How does death make a person perform ghusl? Very good, excellent. Yeah. So if a person dies, you have to wash and shroud the body before burying the body. So ghusl for that individual becomes an obligation. Ghusl for that person becomes an obligation. And there are a number of hadith which speak about this. The Prophet ﷺ, he was telling the female companions who were washing his daughter who passed away, he said, wash her three times or five times or more than this. It's a hadith in Bukhari and Muslim. Okay, so it's a command from the Prophet ﷺ. And of course other narrations speak about this tradition and this obligation of washing the body when a person has passed away. So these are the moments and the times when a person is obligated to perform ghusl. So a person, number two, when the private parts meet, number three, when a woman is off her menstrual cycle, number four, when a person has recovered from her postpartum circumstance and her postpartum situation, and number five, death. When a person dies, ghusl has to be performed on the body of the Muslim who passes away, regardless of his circumstances. In the future, maybe inshallah we'll speak about how the body is washed, specifically ahkam related to the dead person. But every single Muslim who dies, it's an obligation and it is right for his body to be washed and shrouded and prayed over. Every Muslim, whether he's a righteous person, whether he's not a righteous person, okay, if he's a Muslim, if he was a Muslim and he claimed to be a Muslim and he was known to be a Muslim, then washing and shrouding the body after he dies is something which is his right as a Muslim. So these are the circumstances when it's required and when it's an obligation for a person to perform ghusl. Now, how is ghusl done? How is ghusl done? There are two ways in which a person can perform ghusl that the scholars mention. The first is a complete ghusl, or the ghusl which is, you could say, more in line with the sunnah of the Prophet ﷺ. So it's more specific in its manner. You have the complete ghusl, and then the other one is the accepted ghusl, meaning the ghusl is done, okay, but you have the more complete ghusl, which is more specific in terms of its description. So what is this complete ghusl? First of all, when a person performs ghusl, he makes intention. Okay, of course, that's for either of the ghusls, whether it's a complete one or the suffice one, the sufficient ghusl. Regardless, he has to make the intention. So you make the intention to perform ghusl, and then with regards to this in the heart, and then you perform wudu. So wudu is part of ghusl. So a person performs wudu, and before he performs wudu, of course he washes his hands. Just like in wudu, you wash your hands at the beginning before you perform wudu. Likewise, you wash your hands before performing wudu, and then you perform wudu. And the Prophet ﷺ, it said that sometimes he would wash his feet and sometimes he would delay washing the feet and leave it until the end. Sometimes he would wash his feet after doing wudu, of course, because it's the last thing you do. And sometimes he would delay the washing of the feet until the end. So a person performs wudu, so he makes intention, he washes, says Bismillah, washes his hands and performs wudu. And then he pours water over his body, over his head three times. Pours water over his head three times, making sure it reaches the roots of the head. And then he washes the rest of the body. And it's encouraged to start with the right side. It's encouraged to start with the right side. So, of course, intention is with every single act of worship. You have to make intention. And then you say Bismillah, because it's sunnah to say Bismillah before doing anything. And you start with the specific acts. And then after the specific acts, you start with the more general. So you do wudu. After you perform wudu, you wash your feet. It can either be done after the wudu itself, at the end of the wudu, or it can be done after that. Then a person pours water over his head until it reaches the roots. Then a person pours water over the rest of his body, and he starts with the right side, and then washes the rest of the body and washes the private parts also. That's also included with the rest of the body. He washes the private parts as well. And of course, he has to make sure the water reaches all parts of the body. He has to make sure the water reaches all parts of the body. So this is the manner in which a complete ghusl is done. The suffice ghusl, the ghusl which is sufficient, the second type of ghusl, what would that be? Of course, you make intention, and then you basically make sure that the whole body is washed with water. That the whole body is washed with water. So this, if a person did this for whatever reason, okay, maybe he's in a rush or he's tired, whatever the case may be, if a person does this ghusl, okay, the sufficient ghusl, where he just goes into the bath and he just washes his whole body, okay, without having washed his hands and without having done wudu and without washing the right side first, etc., his ghusl is still valid. His ghusl is still valid. Like we said with wudu, you know, certain things are from the sunnah of wudu. Okay, if a person doesn't do them, technically his wudu is still valid. But of course, when a person follows the sunnah and he does those things from the sunnah, then of course, there's more reward when a person makes more effort in following the suffice ghusl would be a person washing the whole body. And also to some of the scholars they mentioned doing madmada and istinshaq. So of course in wudu we rinse the mouth, we rinse the nose. Some of the scholars they also say you must wash the mouth and rinse the nose. If a person doesn't do this, inshallah, the ghusl is still valid. But the scholars say it's better to be on the safe side and wash and rinse the mouth and the nose also when he's performing ghusl, just to get out of the khilaf, to get out of the issue of, you know, risk of the person's ghusl not being accepted. So that's with regards to how the ghusl is actually done. That's with regards to how the ghusl is done. Now, a few things with regards to a person's intention. Let's say, for example, a person made the intention for ghusl, but not from janaba. Not because he was with his spouse or because something came out of the private part. Let's say he just wanted to do ghusl. Maybe it's Friday. And so he wants to perform ghusl because he's going for salah, for Jum'ah. And so he performs ghusl. That was his intention. His intention wasn't to clean himself and purify himself from janaba. What happens in this situation? Does it suffice for both? Does that one intention cover both? The scholars, they say, it does. The scholars say it does. So a person was in a state of janaba on Friday morning, and you know he was planning on obviously performing ghusl because he's going to go for Jum'ah Salah. And so he performs ghusl with that intention in mind because it's Friday. Okay? And didn't really have the intention of it purifying himself from janaba. It suffices for both. The ghusl would suffice for both. It covers both. So a person doesn't have to do ghusl again with another intention. A person doesn't have to do ghusl again. Also, if a person made the intention let's say he didn't have wudu, for example, and then he was with his spouse, for example, and then he performed ghusl, and his intention was to purify himself from major impurity, not minor impurity. What's minor impurity? When a person has to perform wudu. Major impurity, when you have to perform ghusl. So this person, he never had wudu, and then he was with his spouse, he was intimate with his spouse, and now he has to perform ghusl. So now he didn't have wudu, and also now he has to do ghusl. So when he ghusl, because he was in a state of janaba, does it suffice for minor impurity also? Yes, it does. It covers both. So meaning, he doesn't have to separately now go and do wudu. The scholars, they also say, well, if he's doing ghusl for janaba, then in that ghusl, he's doing wudu anyway. If he's doing this, the full ghusl, then he's doing wudu in that ghusl in the first place. So the act of wudu is being done in the ghusl. And if a person is doing the sufficient ghusl, then again it suffices. It covers both. It covers major impurity and it covers also minor impurity. So if a person does ghusl and he never had wudu, can he pray after performing ghusl from janaba, for example? Yes, he can. Yeah, you can pray even if you never specifically did wudu, because you did ghusl for major impurity, which takes the place of minor impurity, even if you didn't do wudu in that ghusl itself, because it covers both, based on what the ulama and what the scholars mention. So that's with regards to a person's intention. That's with regards to a person's intention. And with regards to a person performing ghusl, like we said, if those signs aren't there, for example, the ejaculation and the mani coming out of the body, then there is no need for him to perform ghusl. It has to be established first that it has come out of the body. And that again goes back to the principle that we mentioned before, that certainty isn't removed by doubt. So with that, we've concluded the chapter on ghusl. Any questions before we finish? Any questions? Anybody have any questions? One? Yeah, so there are certain circumstances and certain situations where wudu is recommended and it's not compulsory. From them is the person who accepts Islam. And the scholars differed with regards to the one who accepts Islam. Does he have to perform ghusl? Does he not have to perform ghusl? Some of the scholars, they said he has to perform ghusl. It's Allah knows best, but it seems like the one who becomes a Muslim, it's not compulsory for him to perform ghusl. But again, the scholars say, in order to avoid this issue of differences amongst the scholars, it's better for him to perform ghusl. So it wouldn't become an obligation. There are narrations of the Prophet ﷺ commanding a couple of the companions when they became Muslim to perform ghusl. And that's what's used as evidence. To where the Prophet ﷺ commands people to perform ghusl from janaba and from the other things that we've mentioned. Whereas this specific issue of the new Muslim, there's no general hadith. That's what the scholars say, that these are specific circumstances. Of course, there are many examples of people becoming Muslim. Umar ibn Khattab radiallahu anhu, the famous story, so many people who became Muslim, but there are no narrations of those companions, the 10 promised Jannah, the other famous companions, in their stories of when they became Muslim, of them performing ghusl. So scholars mentioned this, that this shows it's not something which is compulsory. They say it's something which is recommended. And in order for a person to avoid the khilaf, a person should highly encourage the new Muslim to perform ghusl. Also, what's the wisdom behind performing ghusl for the Muslim, for the new Muslim? Well, they're not impure anymore, they're Muslim now, alhamdulillah. Why would they need to do ghusl? Remove. But the shahada removes sins anyway. So when you make the shahada and you become a Muslim, Allah removes غفر الله ما تقدم من ذنبه. All your sins are forgiven. Did I have to do wudu? That was before a Muslim. The scholars, they say, just as he's purified himself spiritually, because now he's become Muslim, he's purified himself inwardly, likewise, he should purify himself outwardly by performing ghusl. So they say that's from the wisdoms of a new Muslim performing ghusl. Yeah, so with the issue of the new Muslim, it seems like Allah knows best, that is something which is recommended, not something which is an obligation. Yes, brother. Yeah, so that would also be permissible. That would be permissible. Yeah. So again, that's another thing. There are certain circumstances when it's encouraged for a person to perform ghusl, the Friday prayer. So before the Jum'ah Salah, it's encouraged. When else is it encouraged for a person to perform ghusl? Eid. Day of Eid. Eid al-Fitr, Eid al-Adha, it's recommended. So it's not an obligation, but it's recommended for a person to perform ghusl prior to that. Also, interestingly, the one who's washing the dead body, it's recommended for them, for themselves to have a ghusl, to perform ghusl. It's not compulsory, but it's recommended. Why? There are narrations which mention the companions, they would perform ghusl. Some of the companions didn't perform ghusl, and so they say it's not something which is compulsory. But some of the scholars, they say that when you're in contact with a dead body, the person who's washing the body and in contact with that dead body, it brings about a type of weakness in the body as a result of being in touch with a body void of any soul, subhanAllah. And so they say it's encouraged for that person to perform ghusl, to rejuvenate himself. So, yeah, a person when he's performed ghusl on a body. Yes. So either he knows it's secretion from the, as a result of ejaculation because of desire, then he has to perform ghusl. He knows it's not that, for sure. That is something else. Might be water, it might be something impure like urine or whatever the case may be. Then he doesn't have to perform ghusl. If he's not sure, then again, he doesn't have to perform ghusl. So if he knows it's many, then he performs ghusl. If he knows it's not many, then he doesn't perform ghusl. And if he's not sure, again, he doesn't perform ghusl. If you can, yeah, if it's possible. Because we said it's recommended, so if he's able to do it, that's fine. Yeah, so again, from the rights of the person who dies is that his body should be washed. And a person does whatever he can to wash the body. So for example, back in the COVID days, if a person died, the people washing the body, they would take precautions as if the body was seriously contaminated with some kind of serious disease that was contagious. You would wear whatever you can to protect yourself, hazmat suit or something similar that covers the whole body where you're protected, and then you wash the body. If, for example, the body is damaged and you're worried that you applying water to the body is going to cause more damage to the body, then you do whatever you can. So you can take a damp cloth or sponge and you can just, you know, gently apply water to the body. So, but you do whatever you can to try to wash the body of the deceased, regardless of the circumstances of the body itself. Because again, it's a right of the body. No. You don't need to. That would count, that would be valid as a form of ghusl. With the intention, of course. Any other questions? Okay, inshallah. So with that, we'll conclude and we'll continue. There's a few questions here before I forget. If the person is making ghusl when not in a state of janaba, but they make the second type of ghusl without making wudu, do they still need to make wudu separately? No, you don't need to make wudu separately. So if you do ghusl, you don't have to make wudu separately. That ghusl also counts as your wudu, basically. Even if you don't do wudu in that ghusl itself, like we said. So a sufficient ghusl, where you just wash the whole body, would count, and then you can pray without having to do wudu. When discussing postpartum, you mentioned when the woman recovered from postpartum circumstances. When you write questions down, brothers and sisters, try to write it down clearly and concisely, because some of these questions, I don't understand what they mean. In regards to pouring water over your head, does stepping in and out of the shower suffice, or must it be with a bucket? No, of course, you can use a shower, you can use a bucket, any means by which the water is applied to the body. It doesn't matter how the water is applied, as long as the water reaches the whole body. For a complete ghusl, can you do it in this order, washing the hands, washing the private parts, doing wudu, washing the hair, etc.? That's fine as well, yeah. Does touching a dead body mean you have to perform ghusl? Again, we said it's recommended for a person to perform ghusl. For salah, yes. So she doesn't have to do wudu because the ghusl takes the place of the wudu itself. Will the washing of the private part nullify the wudu? So we mentioned this. We said touching the private parts, washing the private parts, which is istinja, if you're doing istinja, then it would invalidate the wudu. Because you've just been to the bathroom, you've just been to the toilet, akramakumullah. So if you've been to the toilet and you're washing the private parts, then of course it nullifies the wudu. If a person touches the private parts with desire, then it nullifies the wudu. If a person touches the private parts without desire, then it wouldn't nullify the wudu, and Allah knows best. Washing the hands and washing the private parts. If you wash a body, do you need to do ghusl again? We answered this already. How do you wash the dead body? So the manner in which you wash the dead body is the same as the manner in which you wash a body in ghusl. It's the same way, the same technique, the same method is applied. Unless, of course, as we mentioned, there are things wrong with the body. The body is it's highly damaged. Okay, it's very sensitive to anything that may be applied to it from water, etc. Then in those situations, you do whatever you can. Does 40 days postpartum begin on the day a woman gives birth or the day after? So as soon as the woman gives birth, that's when postpartum starts. So that's when the 40 days would start, inshallah. Okay, inshallah. So with this, we'll conclude. Jazakumullah khair. Subhanakallahumma bihamdika ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk. Wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.